And welcome back, everyone, to the Dear Taiwan podcast. My name is Teacher Joseph. Today on the podcast, we have something a little bit different. My good friend Hannah, who's also an English teacher here in Taiwan, just finished up a bicycle trip around the whole country, looping the main island. And I called her up and interviewed her to ask some questions all about how the trip was, how the trip was planned, any hardships they encountered, her and her friend, and just to reflect on the experience. And we ended up having quite the long conversation, so this is actually part one of two of Hannah's Bicycle Huandao. Hope you enjoy. All right, here we go. Welcoming the world traveler and the Taiwan traveler over here to the Dear Taiwan podcast. Let's welcome Hannah.
Hi.
Hi, Hannah. We've known each other for quite a long time. We've traveled quite a lot together. You want to introduce yourself for all of our listeners?
I guess so, yeah. I'm Canadian. I've been in Taiwan for about the same amount of time as you, just a little bit less, I think, 8 years.
Yep.
Traveled around, other than Taiwan, I lived in Korea for 6 years, and I've traveled around, you know, South America, Europe, Asia, places like that.
Yeah, basically the entire world, minus, like, I don't know, have you been to the Middle East or Sub-Saharan Africa?
I mean, no, I've only been to South Africa. It's the only place I've been to in Africa. So
almost every continent. That's great.
Yeah.
So Hannah and I have both done plenty of huandaos. Myself, I've done 5 huandaos on my scooter only, but Hannah has done huandaos on her scooter, and walking, and just now recently, biking.
About as many scooter huandaos as you have, and then throw the bicycle and the walking in there.
And yeah, but I mean, walking and biking, that's why we're here. That's totally a different experience and different feel. So for our listeners who might not be familiar with the phrase huandao, it literally just means around the island, because Taiwan, obviously, is an island country. It's about twice as big as Massachusetts, maybe about as big as like Hungary in Europe. It's not the biggest country in the world, clearly, but it's also not the smallest. And with the mountain ranges in the middle kind of taking up over half the landmass, it feels much bigger than it actually is, because you can't just go everywhere as easily as possible. So what compelled you to first scooter, then walk, and then bike all around Taiwan?
I mean, mostly, like, to quote Sir Edmund Hillary, because it's there, like, yeah, it's there, and I'm here, and, like, growing up in Canada, I'd meet travelers, and they'd say, like, oh, have you been to Niagara Falls? Have you been to Lake Louise? Have you been to this place or that place? And at the time when I was younger, the answer was no. I hadn't explored the country that I was living in, and it always galled me to have to say, no, I haven't explored the country I'm living in.
Sure.
Yeah, so then when I moved to Taiwan and I had enough vacation time to really enjoy stuff, I really wanted to see Taiwan and experience it. And, like, traveling on the scooter is fantastic. You meet a lot of people, you travel around, you see fun things, but I felt like you were going too fast. Like, you don't really get a sense of a place by, you know, driving through it and pulling over and having coffee for 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah, and, like, there's a lot of, like, Taiwan's a very population-dense place, plus the mountains, so there's just a lot of places to see in the first place by number. There's no expanses of land without, you know, another town maybe 20 minutes away. But I hear what you're saying. Like, if you're just scootering through it all, you kind of miss a lot of stuff.
No, like, you see something as you're driving by on the scooter and it's cool, but then you see things so much more in depth on foot. You know, you hear the birds singing and the insects screeching and, like, the leaves blowing in the wind and monkeys yelling at you because you're actually spending enough time there that they notice you and get annoyed that you're there. It just makes it a lot more of an intimate experience with the place.
Yeah, and if you're crossing the Zhuoshui River between Yunlin and Jiayi on the longest bridge in Taiwan, that bridge actually feels like the longest bridge in Taiwan, I imagine, as opposed to just driving across it.
Well, I mean, I feel like all the bridges feel long because none of the bridges are really designed with pedestrians or cyclists in mind. Even the ones that are officially on the cycling Honda routes, like, often don't have a bike lane. Some of them do, but many of them don't. So a lot of the time you're on a bridge and you're just like, I'm on the shoulder of the highway. It's like less than a meter wide, half a meter wide. And I'm just like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. I hope I'm allowed to swear on your podcast.
Sure. Now you can.
Well, I have now.
Yep. Yeah. And like oftentimes it's just not even bridges, but in general, the scooter lane will evolve into a parking lot for cars, and the scooters will be pushed into the car lane, leaving nowhere for the pedestrians and cyclists in the first place. And the buses just kind of, the road can kind of be a bit of a hot mess.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time I haven't really had many interactions with buses because I will deliberately pick a route that doesn't have much in the way of direct buses or transit options there. Just because I don't want to deal with the trucks roaring through because this is the most direct way.
Yeah, you're not going to walk on the number one the entire way around the country.
Exactly. Like if there's a parallel road that's quiet and covered in rice paddies, that's the one I want to go on.
Yeah, and then a lot of those really beautiful roads, those are not the ones that you end up going down on scooter Huandaos, because the mindset of a scooter Huandao is you're going from point to point. It's not so much focused on this journey or this range of road as your activity for the day. You want to go here, then here, then here. And scootering can be kind of a means to get to places as opposed to the journey itself being the most beautiful part, except for, I mean, the mountains are a bit different though, but.
Yeah. I mean, the mountains are different, but yeah, with the walking on foot, there's definitely this feeling that like what I'm doing is walking. My activity for the day is walking. And then wherever I end up at the end of the day just happens to be where I end up when my legs are tired, as opposed to, you know, a destination that I picked out because there's anything interesting there.
Yeah, you might end up at 5 p.m. and just in some random town with nothing nearby, but that's just where you are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, most of the time, there is something interesting there, but also it tends to already be closing at 5 p.m. and I'm exhausted, so then I have to decide if I'm going to stick around till it opens. And this is the funny thing for me. Like, a lot of places in Taiwan don't open till 11 or 12. But I mean, like, there were lots of times where I'd be, you know, in a beautiful little mountain town and there's a coffee shop. And I'm like, oh, I'd love to pop in and try the local coffee. Well, the local coffee shop is open at 11 a.m. So here I am spending the night in the beautiful mountain town, and I would gladly drink their coffee in the morning, and I would stick around till 9 a.m. or so to do so. But like 11 a.m., that's half my day wasted.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you have to kind of begin planning the evening a few hours before sunset, of course.
Yeah. And I mean, I just tend to find I got at least 60% of my distance in before noon. And then I'd stop and have a rest and then walk a little bit in the afternoon. But then I start like looking at Google Maps and checking out where I'm going to end up that night and if there's anything interesting to stop at. And, you know, so generally, like, I would be almost ready. Like, I'm planning my evening at like 3 p.m.
So in terms of planning, that's my next topic. I guess not just for the walking Huandao, but your most recent biking Huandao. How did you begin planning these trips? And did you actually like do some training beforehand at all?
The walking trip, I did no training, just like walking is walking and I can do that. The biking trip, I did do some training. Like I was going to the gym a little bit. I did a few practice rides. I did one specific mountain practice ride because I wanted to check that how many kilometers of mountain could I realistically give myself to do in a day. So I did that. Like I did a practice ride from Miaoli to Taichung. There's some nice mountains around there.
That's a pretty hilly area.
Yeah, it's a really hilly area. And then I ended up not going to Taichung. I ended up doing a loop around Miaoli through the mountains anyway. But yeah, like I did an 80 kilometer practice ride just to check that, you know, 80 kilometers was a number of kilometers that I could do in a day, which it was. Great. So I did.
Good. Yeah. And even like, even if you do stick to the coast on a bike or walking Guangdao, you still can't avoid the mountains around like Pingdong County or Yilan or Fulong area. You're just going to have to go up into them sometime.
Based yeah.
on Taiwan geography.
Yeah. And I mean, so I wanted to know, like, and also, like, the coast around Hsinchu, the north northwest coast, the coastal road is not very pretty. You're, like, going under a highway and then merging with the highway and then going under the highway and merging with the highway. It's awful. I don't really like that road.
On my first episode of this podcast, back when I was just kind of playing around with it, you know, making a podcast, I did, like, it was Taoyuan and Hsinchu. I spent like a significant portion of the episode kind of just dissing Taoyuan and Hsinchu's coasts because like I've biked it, I've done plenty of scooter trips around there, and it's just like, it's just really industrial and kind of gross.
Yeah. And so like when I was planning my bicycle Hondao, I went with a friend of mine, a coworker, Owen. I had 3 weeks that I had taken off work. So like my limiting factor was I had 20 days, just under 3 weeks.
Okay. Yeah, that's
so,
a lot of time though.
Yeah, that's a lot of time. Like a standard bicycle Hondao is supposed to be 7 to 10 days, but that's on a road bike with like, you know, people who are cyclists.
Yeah, that's like if you're actually doing this for sport, kind of.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not doing it for sport. I'm doing it to see things, you know? So yeah, like basically what I did was like sat down with the map of Taiwan, looked at the number of kilometers there were, and sort of picked out like what were the things that I wanted to spend time at as a touristy thing. And Owen has only been in Taiwan for a year, and since I had invited him to join me on the trip, I wanted to like pick out some places that were, in my opinion, like don't miss places. I picked like Alishan, you know, Ali Mountain. You got to like go up there at sunrise and stuff. So I was like, okay, we want to spend a rest day there and take the train up and see the sunrise and do a hike that day, because I feel like, you know, if you're going to have an experience of Taiwan for 20 days, you really shouldn't miss the high mountains, you know, definitely.
The mountains are like, you know, I always tell people, like, if you're going to come to Taiwan, you got to see 3T, you got to see Taipei, Tainan, and Taroko. And you know, Taroko being the mountainous area of, well, in my opinion, the most beautiful spot in the whole country. But like, yeah, you can't come to Taiwan and not see the mountains.
Exactly. And so we picked Taroko, we picked Alishan, and then we also wanted to do staying at the aquarium in Pingdong.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, which that had to be an overnight. So, like, that was actually the first thing that we booked. You know, we looked at it and we were like, okay, well, that one's going to be just before halfway through because the West Coast is flatter, the East Coast is hillier. We're going counterclockwise, so slightly less than half the time to get down to the southernmost point and then spend an overnight there. And then we have more than half the time to finish.
Did you have to do any planning with equipment or getting a bike or like special gear or food?
Not really. I had owned a giant bike that I then sold to a friend when he wanted to do a bicycle Hondao.
Giant being the brand, not the size.
Yeah, giant
of
being
bike.
The brand of. Yeah, no, giant being the brand of bike. It's a. So yeah, I had borrowed, I had sold this bike to a friend, but he wasn't using it, so I borrowed it right back again.
Okay, sure.
So it was already set up with saddlebags and rear view mirror, lights and reflectors. Pretty much everything else. I took it into the shop to have them look at it and confirm that it was safe to use. Replaced the brake pads and checked the gears and all that stuff. So
I remember doing a bike trip in my teenage years, and like one of the things that I didn't think about but is kind of obvious now that needs replacing and fine-tuning is like a lot of dirt and grime really gets into the cylindrical bar that connects your pedals together. And like that's one of the things that like you really should replace here and there, or just get like professionally clean, because then it just makes it so much more smooth a ride after that.
Exactly. So like I took the bike in for maintenance, and then other than that, basically, that was all. You know,
okay.
the packing list was basically two outfits to ride bikes in, one outfit to wear like as pajamas or when I was doing laundry. Yeah, then one really cold weather outfit, because the whole thing of going to Alishan is to watch the sunrise at the top of the mountain, which we were going to do on January 2nd, so the day after the New Year.
Right. Yeah, and like you will get proper winter conditions up in the mountains in January here in Taiwan, even though it is officially tropical. I mean, did you see snow on the Taipei Mountain?
We did not see snow. It had snowed a couple days earlier, but there was no snow on the ground. There was a little bit of frost on the ground in the morning. It was just around 0 degrees Celsius that morning. So, like, there was frost on the ground, but no snow.
Yeah, regardless, you don't want to be caught up there in, like, you know, biking gear or, you know, summer clothes. Actually, I just saw in the news a few days ago, there was the fact that this made the news kind of tells you how small of a country Taiwan is. There was a British guy who was biking like Taichung to Hualien, and he only was wearing like cyclist clothes. And once he got up to Hehuanshan, it was 7 degrees Celsius. So he ended up almost getting like, I don't know about hypothermia, but like having some health issues being up there in that cold of a weather and just really cyclist gear. And the police had to come and kind of get him from the side of the road and bring him back to the station and like let him warm up and give him some light jackets to go back down in, saying like, you know, if you're going to come to Hehuanshan, which is the road gets up to 3,200 meters, like you better bring some warm clothes because the weather's not going to be the same as it is down in the plains.
And we had thought about going up to Hehuanshan. We had set aside a day and like contacted some people around Hualien with the idea of renting a truck and driver that would drive us up to Hehuanshan and drop us off there, and we would ride down the 75 kilometers. Yeah, but it was raining in Hualien that day, and we were not going to risk snow on the upper peaks on bicycles. So we ended up renting a scooter and leaving the bicycles and just riding a scooter through, you know, the bottom 20 kilometers of Taroko Gorge.
Yeah, seeing all the key sites, seeing the gorge itself. Cool.
Yeah.
So you've talked about a few of the spots you guys visited, Alishan, Taroko. You talked about the aquarium down in nearby Kenting. What was your exact route, if you want to kind of go through it with me on a map?
Sure. Basically, day one was Zhongli to Miaoli. And we had talked about whether we wanted to do the coast or the mountain roads. And that was why I did the practice run. And we ended up doing the mountain road. We had wanted to do the number three the whole way, but we decided to go off a little bit into Tofen and then to Miaoli, slightly inland a little bit.
It's a good choice because the number three is far more beautiful than the coast.
Yeah, it's much more beautiful than the coast. And the only concern was if we could do it comfortably, because, you know, that was going to be like an 80 to 90 kilometer day.
That's a solid day of biking, yeah.
Yeah, and the whole route, if you take the official number one Huandao route, would be 900 kilometers. Ours in the end turned out to be 1,240.
That's awesome.
But yeah, if you had gone on the official route, that would have been 900 kilometers. And it was like 90 on the first day is 10%, which is kind of excessive for the first day.
It's excessive, but if you're one of those cyclist athletes who has a road bike and going to go on the flatter roads, I'm sure you could do 90 in one day pretty comfortably, but like not on the number three necessarily.
Yeah, and the problem was that there really isn't a place to stop if we had stayed on the number three the whole time. The first place where there are hostels on the side of the road would have been 100 and something kilometers in at the top of a steep hill.
So getting through the number three to Miaoli, you're going to hit San Juan and then possibly Nanchuan, or does it go to Dahu?
It goes to Dahu. Dahu would have been the first place to stop. Nanchuan was an option, but it would have taken us, you know, like a 15-kilometer detour.
That's actually a pretty sizable detour.
Yeah, it's a pretty sizable detour on a bike. And, like, I thought about it, but like then we would have still had that steep hill to Dahu first thing the next morning.
And San Juan to Dahu is actually pretty far, right?
Yeah, it is still pretty far. So what we ended up doing was going off down to the side to Miaoli City. So we had a little bit more flat land. And that was a nice, easy way to finish off the day. And then we like went Miaoli City to Taichung could only be like 40, 50 kilometers if we kept going straight. But we wanted to get back onto the number three and see that mountain road. So we ended up doing like 90 kilometers the second day to go up through Dahu and like, you know, up into the mountains again and then stop at Dahu, pick strawberries, keep going. There were a lot of hills that day. That ended up being our hilliest day with 700 meters of elevation gain.
Wow. Wow. That's even hillier than like the road that goes between like Pingdong to Taidong.
Yeah, no, it is hillier than that. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I didn't expect that. But then, yeah, you can kind of get like a really great view coming down from Dahu over Liutan Reservoir into Taichung. I think the northernmost part of Taichung is called Holi. And like, there's like a great view on that road and a bunch of like coffee trucks.
Were a couple of different coffee trucks. At that point, we had just stopped at the reservoir for corn on the cob and drinks and whatever we got there. So we didn't stop at the coffee trucks. Seriously, Joseph, like those hills that you notice on the scooter but don't think about are so significant on a bicycle. So
I could believe it actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So from that reservoir going up, it was just like I was just going all out at my top speed, which wasn't that fast. And then like stopping when my heart rate got too fast, catching my breath, going all out again. Owen had a completely different strategy, which was like slow and steady the whole time. So we did not do hills at the same pace at all, but it didn't matter. In the end, we both got there. But by the time we got to the top of that viewpoint, then it was all downhill and smooth sailing. And my bike is very happy to go 45 kilometers an hour down a hill. So we did not stop at those coffee trucks. We did not stop to admire that view. I sail down that hill all the way down to the first 7-Eleven where we had to stop for water. But, like, it wasn't really wind in your hair because, you know, mask regulations and helmets kind of don't give you the wind in your hair feeling as much. But
so was there any points where you actually had to, like, get off and walk your bike?
No. Yes, but no. There were points where it would have been faster to get off and walk my bike. But I didn't because this is the biking trip and I have already done a walking trip. And if I wanted to walk the bike, that would have been the walking trip, not the biking trip.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. Okay, so from Taichung onwards.
Taichung onwards, did we go directly from Taichung to Jiayi? I believe we did. Yeah, that was straight. That was our longest day of 105 kilometers. Yeah, and it was basically, I believe there was no uphill whatsoever except getting up onto a bridge occasionally, which, you know, was like 100 meters of uphill. Otherwise, yeah, there was no uphill whatsoever. It was just flatland or downhill, and we just went to Jiayi Station, and that was a long day. 105 kilometers was a long day.
It's one thing if you get 105 kilometers and a significant portion of it is like going downhill for fun, but that's a very flat part of the country. Did you encounter any wind?
There was no wind in that section, really. We didn't really have any crosswinds or issues like that. That was much more in the south. But then we got into Jiayi, and we like picked a random hotel near the trains. They had bicycle parking and we left our bicycles parked overnight for two nights while we got on the train and took the train up to Alishan and like had a rest day. Yeah, like we got off at Fengjihu and then like actually walked from Fengjihu to the number 18 road up to Alishan and then took a taxi up to Alishan in the morning for sunrise.
I was gonna say you didn't walk all the way to Alishan. That's a long way.
No. We took the taxi from we walked from Fengjihu to the 18 road.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's much closer.
Yeah. It was something like, I forget, like 7 kilometers, 10 kilometers, not much.
So, I mean, that's still a bit of a walk, but for you, someone who's walked around the entire country, it's not much.
Yeah, it wasn't much. And I mean, I think you, like, the buses that day were going to be like, you know, the buses every 2 hours or something. So it didn't seem worth it.
Yeah. You kind of have to weigh the plus and benefit, like a comfortable feeling in your leg versus like waiting that long.
Yeah. But I mean, then that meant that our rest day was not really a rest day, because after walking 10 kilometers, we like dropped our bags at the hotel, but then immediately went on a tea field hike, which was all stairs, you know, and was a further like 2 hours of walking.
That's so characteristically you. Even a rest day has to be full of like these really amazing plans.
Well, yeah, that is like how we planned the trip. There wasn't a day that was not absolutely full to the brim, like even the rest day. And we watched the sunrise. And so my coworker Owen is 14 years younger than me, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, 14 years younger than me. So he has the enthusiasm of a golden retriever puppy, you know? Recently in the country, everything is cool and new and amazing, and he's going to go check that out. So after we watch the sunrise, like we're hiking down Alishan to the bus stop at the gate to catch a bus back to Jai and pick up our bicycles. And he's like, you know, if we can get back to Jai before noon, then we can totally ride all the way to Tainan to the salt fields, Yentian, and watch the sun set. And wouldn't it be cool to watch the sun rise from Alishan and then watch the sun set on the salt field in the same day? So, you know, once the idea was in his head that we could do that, by damn, we were going to do that. So.
Did you?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We finished. Got down, like saw the sunrise, amazing sunrise, beautiful, hiked down through the park, enjoyed the hike through the park. I mean, pretty much everything was closed because it was just after a long weekend. And so it was the first day off after a long weekend. So most of the vendors were out of there. And also,
in general, you would not have come across much tourist traffic at all anywhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, we were concerned about Taichung on New Year's Eve. We were really worried that we wouldn't find a place to stay in Taichung on New Year's Eve. But, you know, we did. We didn't really have a problem finding a place to stay. Yeah, because, like, that was our concern, was just if we end up in Taichung City on New Year's Eve, it's possible that the hostels will be booked up. But, yeah. You know, we found a place to stay by the train station, the usual. It was easy. We walked in, found a place.
Okay. So now you're seeing the sunset in northern part of Tainan on the coast, overlooking the salt fields, because there's the traditional salt industry there, and now it's a tourist thing, but I'm sure it's amazing.
You know, I was more there just for the view and like it's pretty cool, but like Owen was absolutely in love with this whole like you can actually pick up all the tools that the old salt farmers used and like play with actually like digging salt piles and seeing how it works. So he was like,
I gotta say, I'm usually into that kind of like old-timey, small-town tourism stuff. I found the salt field area to be like really boring, actually.
Yeah, well, you should have gone with Owen because he was so enthusiastic. It was really infectious, like just his absolute delight at like, here's a rake, and he was discussing like, you know, here's the pictures, and it says that they're pushing it, but pushing doesn't make sense. They must have been pulling, and like, you know, reading the like little descriptions of what, you know, the people had been doing, and he's like, no, that makes no sense. They must have been doing this other way. And he was testing different ways of like dragging the salt around into piles. And
that's really adorable. He must like salty food.
And actually, that was actually the first day as well that he had really taken charge of being the one in charge of Google Maps and deciding which route we were going to take to get from A to B. Because the first two or three days, we were riding on places that I had really been a lot of times before, and I had really seen.
Yeah, you're living in Taoyuan, and like Miaoli's right there, basically. I'm sure you've been there probably over a dozen times.
Yeah, so I mean, like all of these routes, I knew all the different roads and like the advantages and disadvantages, and like pretty much every corner I could be like, you know, okay, well, around this corner, then we're going to go uphill for a little bit. And then after like a couple kilometers, we'll be on a flat stretch, and then we'll go downhill for a bit. Like I knew where we were going.
You probably even know like where the convenience stores were, even just offhand.
Exactly. Pretty much once we got to Jai, then it's like, you know, well, there's a bunch of roads and I don't remember which one I took last time I went this way and whatever. So Owen took it on himself to be like, you know what? I should actually try being the one in charge of figuring out which way to go. And he absolutely loved it. He was all like really enthusiastic about picking out the different ways and debating whether we should be on the faster road that would have more traffic lights and more traffic or some quieter road. There's a lot of times where when you select walking or bicycle, Google will send you through a farmer's field where they're literally, it expects you to be walking or biking on some hedge that is just impossible to pass through. So
that,
there
like,
were lots
concrete
of times.
Thing that divides two rice fields?
And not always concrete, sometimes grass, sometimes rocks, sometimes. Yeah, like sometimes a piece of wood.
Wow.
Like it would send you off on those. And so there were several times where Google would send us somewhere and then Google says go straight and there is no road straight. And there isn't even, you know, a concrete thing between two rice paddies. It's just straight up leading you into a rice paddy. So there were a few frustrating moments there. So, you know, every now and again, we'd be pulling over and looking at the map and discussing, like, would we rather be on a quiet road that, you know, may have us figuring out a different way to go later when Google sends us astray, or would we rather be on a busy road, which is more direct, but has traffic and traffic lights, which we don't like.
Yeah. I'm thinking back to my first scooter trip with Matt, and Jiayi was actually the first place where we had the first place I ever got legitimately lost. And now my first scooter trip with Matt was like 2014. So of course, like, smartphones were not like as hyper powerful as they are now. I certainly didn't have a great one back then, but like I remember taking the wrong turn at Budai, which is at like fishing port town. Yeah, we stuck to the coast exclusively. Like that was our thing. Like we're not gonna ever go any more than like whatever it was, like 20 kilometers away from the coast, which had us like skip Taichung and skip Nantou. But then like I went the wrong way and I was like, just try and stick to like numbered roads, like routes with proper numbers. But by the time you get to Jiayi, like a lot of the roads that are like, for example, Jia 20 or Jia 30 or Jia 14, like they're kind of crappy roads. And I'm like, looking, I'm like, okay, I'm on what is a numbered marked route. There are no traffic lights whatsoever or street lights. You couldn't see anything except for like, unless you put your high beams on, but there's, you know, plenty of through traffic coming both ways. And I'm like, I'm looking for a sign for such and such township. I think I'm going the right way, but it would be so nice if there was like a building and a street light on this numbered route. And that was my first time in Jiayi actually.
Yeah. And that was Jiayi was where I think we got lost the most, possibly with the Taidong to Hualien section as an exception when we were trying to find bike routes that were marked but were not there. Jiayi was one of those points where, yeah, as we were trying to get to the coast and be on the coast, well, there's a lot of places where you need to be crossing bridges and there's only one bridge for miles around. So no matter which road you're on, it's going to take you snaking around until you get back to that bridge that was on the road you were originally on when you left it.
Yeah. That's a fair point. And like for our listeners, like Taiwan has this interesting quirk where like bridges span vast river beds with a small river in the middle because it all fills up only during typhoons. So when we say like crossing rivers with bridges, they're really long. But like then below you, when you're on the bridge, you don't see water until like the very middle part. except for that, like, the ground is just unstable to build on. So there's fewer bridges down south than you would think on these larger rivers, and they're just super long and kind of a pain to get across almost.
Yeah, I mean, especially on foot or on a bicycle, but also on a scooter. The bridges generally only tend to be on highways, and highways are closed to scooter, bicycle, and foot traffic. And so then suddenly a smaller road will merge with the highway only for the bridge. And so for 3 to 5 kilometers, you're merged with the big traffic. And then like it exits again as soon as you've crossed this huge dry riverbed.
So from the salt flats in Tainan, I assume you went into Tainan City next?
Yeah, we went into Tainan City basically because we wanted to go to that Sitsao tunnel, got on a little boat and went through the mangrove tour.
Cool. You guys probably get all the footstools and the umbrellas, and you look at the...
You get the bamboo hats.
Bamboo hats? Okay, cool.
Yeah, like the rice field hat, you know, the traditional one.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, so you get like the rice field hat and sit on a little footstool, and you're on this boat and getting a tour of the mangrove forest through these tunnels under the mangrove trees on the water. So that was fun. We did that. That was mostly just to have a break that day and to do some touristy things. Because again, like, Owen hasn't been to any of these places before. He had pretty much only ever been to, I think, Taichung and Ilan were the only places he had been before doing this trip. So, yeah, I mean, it was a fun thing to do. And then also it was an excuse because I wanted to stop in Anping for a meal. And so if we went and did the boat ride as our first thing, then Anping is the logical neighborhood of Tainan to ride through. Yeah. So we stopped for lunch in Anping and then rode on toward Kaohsiung that day. And we stopped, where's that sugar factory? Chiaotou. Yeah, we stopped in Chiaotou that night.
Okay, so that's North Kaohsiung. So you're...
Yeah, North Kaohsiung.
It's not too urban yet.
We had hoped to actually bypass Kaohsiung entirely because we wanted to have our next rest day be Xiaoliuqiu, which is south of Kaohsiung and is famous for snorkeling with sea turtles, which we wanted our next rest day to be.
Yeah, Xiaoliuqiu is pretty awesome, actually. Every time I've been there, I mean, I haven't ever stayed overnight there, but I've long wanted to. And
yeah, well, and actually, the only other time I had been to Xiaoliuqiu was with you way back in the day, like 7 years ago.
Was that a good time where we had to wait like 3 hours for the boat?
Yeah, we had to wait 3 hours in a lineup for the ferry on a holiday weekend.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was a fun trip, but it was still like, God, that kind of threw a wrench in the day's plans.
Yeah, so the plan was like, we definitely have to spend a night there, and we definitely want to go snorkeling with sea turtles. And I had hoped that we would be able to bypass Kaohsiung entirely and actually get to Donggang Harbor, and spend the night in Donggang Harbor. Like, we would definitely have arrived too late for the last ferry, but we could have spent the night in Donggang Harbor. But like, having stopped in Tainan and done touristy stuff, there is just no way.
Yeah, it actually is pretty far because Kaohsiung is a pretty kind of long city, north to south.
Yeah, so we ended up stopping in North Kaohsiung, and then the following day was our rest day, and I'm saying that with air quotes, because we still had 50 kilometers to go before we could start our rest day. But we did do 50 kilometers, get to the ferry terminal by like 11 a.m. and, you know, were able to catch a ferry before noon to arrive at Xiaoliuqiu just after noon. And we were able to get snorkeling same day, which was nice.
Nice. Okay. Is snorkeling there seasonal? I've never actually gone snorkeling there.
I was going to say it's not necessarily seasonal. Like, it was definitely the off season. There were several places that I called, and being able to speak Chinese is a huge bonus here basically just using Google Maps to look up snorkeling places and then phoning them and saying, hey, are you guys open today? Would you run us a tour around 3 p.m.? You know, and I had to call a few of them before I found one that was actually open and running a tour that day, because it's winter and it was just after the holidays again. So, you know, people were taking days off.
Of course, yeah. And it's an island pace of life also. So I imagine people who live there, like, they don't really have maybe, like, such a fixed definition of when they have to be at work versus not at work, because it's a small island.
And I mean, the same thing when we were looking for a place to stay. We rocked up into town, pulled up Google Maps to look for places that were in our price range, walked into one of them, and, like, the employee there was totally not expecting to have any guests at all that night. That really surprised me, one thing there. There were a couple of places where, see, what we did, we looked up on Google Maps, and then the prices were provided by Booking.com. We checked what price Booking said, and then spoke to the hotel directly to see what price they would offer, because generally it would be lower. But interestingly, though, generally Booking gives you a price assuming that two people share one bed. And of course, like, Owen and I are coworkers, so we don't want to share one bed. We want, like, a room with two beds in it. So there were lots of times where, like, the hotel would match the price of a two-person room to give us a four-person room.
Okay. Lucky you.
So, yeah, we ended up, like, saving a lot of money. You know, if we had been searching for a room for four people, which is the room with two double beds, yeah, if we had searched for a room for four people, we would have ended up paying twice as much money. But generally, when we said, like, we're two people, but we want separate beds, we got a family room or a party room for way cheaper.
And that's just a function of you speaking Chinese, it being the off season, and them just kind of almost happy that you're there to give them some business.
Yeah. Although the one in Chaliocho is the one that reminded me of it, because, like, you know, the woman demanded to see what price Booking was giving for the room. And I was like, well, Booking says $1,100 for a two-person room, but we want a four-person room. And she's like, oh, $1,100, let me phone the owner. And then phoned the owner and got us a four-person room for $1,100, which was not actually what I was asking for, but okay then.
That's actually really cheap, actually, especially for a touristy area.
Yeah, like, what is that in U.S. dollars? Like, 40-something?
It's about 40. I mean, the U.S. dollar right now is down. But yeah, that's roughly $40, like maybe $37 U.S.
For a four-person room in a tourist town, admittedly, exactly. Like, in off-season in the middle of the week. But
no, so you have your rest day on Chaliocho, and I imagine that the next day you have the ferry back.
Ferry back, and then rush down to get to Kending Beach by bedtime.
And that's a long, straight, windy waterside road.
Holy cow, was that ever... That was the windiest road by far. Like, just...
I believe it.
Like, we were expecting the wind to be against us. Like, we had been warned, if you're doing this in the winter, the wind is against you on the coast. If you're doing it, like... Because they say, go counterclockwise, because then the mountains are at the end instead of the beginning. Which makes sense. But at the same time, the wind is against you if you go in the winter when the weather is
cold. Oh, but also, if you go counterclockwise, then you get the East Coast on your side of the road the entire way back up.
Yeah, exactly. And the East Coast is gorgeous, so that's desirable. Yeah, but they said the wind would be against us, but it wasn't necessarily against us. The wind was just buffeting us from all directions, like... Oh, it came from our left, it came from our right, it came ahead, like, forward, it then was sometimes behind us. There were times when Owen, in particular, because of the way his bike was set up with his, it was, like, bulkier than mine. His pack was, like, a backpack in a milk crate strapped to the back of his bike, which then when the wind was blowing around... He was catching a lot of that wind and, like, feeling like he was going to be knocked off the road or into traffic.
The first time I was ever in Hengchun, or kind of, what's it, that Hengchun, Chechung, and Shizhou, the townships down there. That was the only time still that I really felt like I was going to be blown off my scooter by the wind. It was just it was so strong, and I was, like, kind of getting close to losing control of my scooter. It was that bad.
It was like that on the bicycles, too, where, like, you know, it's not as bad as other areas in terms of having sheer cliff drop into the ocean, which the East Coast has and the West Coast doesn't. But at the same time, that's a pretty busy road with, like, you know, trucks and tourist traffic and stuff, like going to a beach town. And it really,
there's a lot of, like, I mean, maybe not at the time that you went because it's the off season, but there's plenty of, like, tour buses leaving Kaohsiung going down to Kenzan on that road. Multi-purpose road with, you know, like, sidewalks, bike lanes, scooter lanes. It's not a highway. And there's no highway there even.
I think that was probably our most difficult section of road in terms of just, you needed your full concentration at all times. Like, we were really, really, really concentrating on riding. Like, you had to be paying attention at all times and reacting to the road and the wind, because it was just threatening to knock us over the whole way. And I had hoped we could get to the southernmost point in Taiwan. I sort of hoped we would get to Kending Old Street and, you know, be able to go to the night market that night, because it's famous for their night market. And I thought that would be a nice, you know, thing to show Owen, who had never been there.
I was going to say that there's good food there, but it's the only night market I've been to where, like, you really got to kind of keep your wits about you and not get hit by a car.
But anyway, we didn't end up making it nearly that far because we were so exhausted from fighting the wind. Basically, as soon as we got to the first section of beach that is officially Kending, we pulled over right there and found a hotel right there on the strip. You know, we made it there that day. And the plan was, that was actually a full day early for our aquarium day in Hongchun. The plan was then to, like, explore the Kending area. If it had been easier to get there, we would have gone hiking in the national park that day.
Yeah, but the national park area is actually kind of way up the hill.
So we would have liked to take some time and go hiking and stuff. And it was like, you know what? This is just something that is going to have to happen on a different trip.
I imagine after that tough, windy day on the road that goes, like Fanliao down to Kenting, that both your legs probably were feeling a lot of stiffness by then. And, like, how were your bikes actually after all that wind?
The bikes were fine. Basically, our only real problem with the bikes, I had a flat tire I had a tire that was losing air. My front tire was losing air regularly. And so we kept having to stop and pump it every half a day until we finally got sick of it and changed it, which we didn't do until after Taidong.
Okay.
But yeah, no, we'll stop and pump the tire and stop and pump the tire. Like, it was holding its air for half a day, just not all day.
And did you guys actually carry your own pump and your own kind of like repair tools as well?
Yeah, I had a repair kit for basic stuff. So it had a pump and two spare tires. It had a multi-tool and the tools that you use to change the tire. We didn't have things for, like, chains or spokes or stuff. Yeah, so we just had that. So we did have a spare inner tube, which was good because we did end up needing it. We did have to stop after a rainy couple of days to get more oil put on the chain, but that was pretty easy.
Okay. So, like, you've already answered my next question in this part. My next question was, like, challenging stretches of roads or weather, but, like, the wind in Hongchun and that part of the road, I think, is it fair to say that's the most challenging part?
Yeah, that was the most challenging weather thing, I guess. The north, basically from Fulong Beach, it started raining when we got to Fulong Beach, and then it rained the rest of our way home. So 2.5 days of nonstop rain.
Sounds like weather up north right now, yeah.
Yeah, it is the weather up north, and it has been pretty much raining like that since we got back. So yeah, it's been raining nonstop. So that was a challenge just from, like, our hands were wet, outdoor face mask regulations, and the paper face mask was wet. You know.
Yeah, the face mask will begin to, like, disintegrate a bit.
It wasn't disintegrating. It was just sticking to my face, which made it really hard to breathe. So Owen just kind of sucked it up and breathed through it and waterboarded himself. I switched out face masks whenever we stopped. At that point, because I had said, like, if the weather's terrible when we get to Ilan, we could just cut across and take a shortcut either through Taipei or park the bikes and go home and wait for a drier day to finish the last 2 days of it. And Owen was very insistent that no, we're going on the entire outside of it. We're going up the north coast. Huandao means go around the island, so we have to go all the way around the island, and there is no cutting through Taipei to be done.
I kind of do agree with him for the sake of what counts as a Huandao, though, like, you know, plenty of people do just kind of like cut through Taipei to avoid Keelung and Liangmingshan. But I'm thinking now in terms of like, if you had noticed really, really terrible weather ahead of time that would have been affecting the northeast part of the country, since you guys were going back to Taoyuan, you probably could have actually found a way to get a bus from Ilan up to Mingshi and then just biked back to Taoyuan through Fuxin Township, Taoyuan, which sounds amazing now that I say it myself.
I still want to do that road on my walking trip because it's just gorgeous. But when you had your hiking accident and we went to rescue your scooter in the middle of winter.
Thank you again.
That was really, 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 really cold. So I would not have done that as a biking trip in winter to avoid bad weather on the north coast, because like I've done that in the winter during bad weather and it's not worth doing.
And the road that goes from Ilan up to Mingshi is insanely steep. It's just, it's all switchbacks. It's like, it's almost stupid how they built it. I can't imagine biking. I can imagine biking through Fuxin, like up to Baling and up to other villages like Silong and over to like the Xinju side of the mountain.
Okay, so we made it from Taoyuan down to Kenting. That's where we're going to leave it today. Stay tuned for part 2 in a few weeks of Hannah's Bicycle Huandao. Sure to be epic.